Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We've been talking to activist Anthony LaSquadro this morning, and we've been talking about circumcision and why it came about, how it came about. So welcome back, Anthony. What are some of the things that happen with that fine tissue when they take it off the baby?
Well, Kathy, you know, that's an interesting question. Some hospitals take that tissue and they turn around and sell it because, you know, once the hospital takes possession of a body part, they become owners of it and they can do basically what they want with it. And there are some hospitals that actually have arrangements with biotech companies to take that tissue, and these biotech companies purchase it and they make products out of it. And those products can be things like cosmetic, skincare, anti-wrinkle cream products. Another thing, you know, it could be tissue grafting and this type of stuff. So there is a whole slew of biotech companies out there that are purchasing this foreskin tissue from babies that never consent to give it up in the first place, and they're basically making profits off of pain.
Mm-hmm. And Anthony, you talked a little bit about the religious aspect of priests being circumcised to make them holier or whatever. What does religion have to do with it now? Is it hard to break through different religious attitudes to talk about this?
Well, you know, circumcision is an important religious practice for Muslims and Jews. And, you know, in the Jewish community, there are a number of activists that are against circumcision, and some of them actually inspired me to become involved years ago. So Jews have come up with a new ceremony called Brit Shalom, and what that is that's the naming ceremony and a welcoming ceremony for a newborn. And instead of cutting the baby's penis, what they do is they cut a pomegranate. And ceremonially, that takes the place of doing that, and the baby doesn't suffer at all. So even some religions are making changes, and they're realizing that this practice that originated thousands of years ago is like, why are we still doing this to our children?
Oh, thank God. But what's the implications of the pomegranate instead?
Well, the pomegranate is a metaphor for the baby's penis, if you will, and by cutting that, you can substitute the pomegranate for the baby's body.
Wow! And how do you have websites and information that people can access to learn more about this when they're making choices?
Well, you know, there's our website at intaction.org. intaction.org. And then we also have another website called foreskin.life, and that's where we promote the positive aspects of foreskin. As I mentioned before, you know, the foreskin is, we call it the four powers of foreskin, which is pleasure, protection, lubrication, and connection. You know, these are all the benefits of having foreskin. This is what nature endowed us with and wants us to have. You know, the foreskin has like over 20,000 nerve endings in it, and it, you know, it has a really important function in that, and, you know, it protects the end of the penis, it keeps it covered and keeps it from getting dried out. You know, it provides lubrication, and it helps when you're with your partner form a greater connection.
Okay, and so it really is so old-fashioned and barbaric that even some of the countries that have been doing it are changing a lot and quite fast with all the information out there.
Things are changing, you know, especially, I mean, Europe's never practiced this. Australia has changed significantly. Their circumcision rates are very low now, and Canada is dropping as well, especially with this new policy statement that came out in 2015 where the Canadian Pediatric Society does not recommend routine circumcision. And finally, I think the U.S. is starting to catch up in this, although our doctors and our medical institutions aren't necessarily helping us, but that's why there's advocates like me that are reaching out to people, and we're creating the change.
Mm-hmm. And if someone were to need a circumcision later on in life, what would the reasons for it be?
We don't necessarily, or I don't have a problem with someone wanting to do it as an adult if that's their choice. Mm-hmm. It may be a cosmetic reason. They prefer the looks of being circumcised, perhaps for some reason, or maybe there's some type of legitimate medical condition that they need to deal with. But when we look at Europe, less than 2% of the men ever decide to get circumcised later in life. They prefer to stay intact. Matter of fact, at some of our events, some men have come up to me and said that they're having an issue and the doctor wants to circumcise them, and what are their options? And I've given them referrals to other doctors that have been able to assist them, and they've come back and contacted me and said, thank you so much. I almost made a bad decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So what wisdom would you have for new pregnant moms right now? How would you tell them about it?
Well, first of all, we explain the benefits of having foreskin and that it's a natural body part. And that resonates with most. But then also we go into what the pain aspect of it is. And some of our exhibits show that. You have to realize, again, doctors don't use anesthesia when they're doing this procedure. Very few do. And, the circumcision process, it's like getting your finger slam shut in a car door, except we're not going to remove your finger until the bleeding stops. So the baby undergoes a tremendous amount of pain and suffering. I know nurses that work on the maternity floors, and when they do the circumcisions, they can hear the baby screaming down the hall. So is that something you really would want to put your child through?
Mm-hmm. And it could create a lot of emotional problems around that, just like PTSD. They wouldn't have any idea how it came about.
Absolutely. I mean, babies can suffer from PTSD. Their brains are releasing cortisone and all the stress hormones during this procedure. At the same time, parts of their brain are still forming, like the amygdala and the hypothalamus, where these neural connections are forming. And people say, well, a baby can't remember it. Well, it's being embedded in his brain, in the wiring, because these connections are being made. And during this process, you're subjecting the baby to all the stress and pain and trauma.
Well, absolutely. And that pain, the sensor, would be a memory to that cell memory of the penis, too, causing pain.
This all gets pre-wired in, and it's been suggested that this can cause behavioral issues later on in life.
Mm-hmm. And globally, we're 80% intact. That's pretty good. That's over the whole globe. If 80% of male children are still intact, it's just a matter of getting the word out there in North America more than anywhere.
I mean, absolutely. Education is the key. That's what we believe. We have such a good case to make. All we need to do is get our information out, and that's the challenge we have. As a nonprofit that doesn't receive a lot of funding, is how do we get our information out to the public? And obviously, media outlets like yourself are a big help to achieving that.
Good. And the places like Africa that have very little medical help, is that something that's done there, or is there any issue around it there, or any thought around it?
I mean, it is. It comes from two sources. Some of it is of a tribal and cultural nature, and then some of it is from the U.S. government that is under the misguided belief that somehow circumcision is going to prevent HIV in Africa, and they've been doing this program now for over 10 years, and they haven't shown any results yet, despite hundreds of millions of dollars being spent and millions of penises being cut. Men are still getting HIV. The only thing that stops HIV is safe sex practices and antiretroviral drugs. But the U.S. government, unfortunately, has got off onto this tangent of trying to promote circumcision in Africa, and it's just a disaster.
Why do you think they would do that? The economics aren't there.
I believe that, you know, there was some researchers that got involved with this. They received a lot of financial compensation for both themselves and their organizations or their institutions, and they were basically told, come out, go out there and come up with a solution. And I don't think anyone really cares if it works or not, but it's about getting the donations in, whether it's from the Bill Gates Foundation or the Clinton Foundation or from PEPFAR, which is the U.S. government aid association. You know, it's just, I think it's just about the money and who's getting paid to do it.
Okay, Anthony, you're a successful businessman and you have used a lot of your hard work and knowledge to create this information for people. Do you take donations to help with this education?
We do. You know, there's any of your listeners that are interested in supporting our mission, we have on our website, you could make donations to it, and we need all the help we can get because we're a small nonprofit and we have the whole 50 states to cover, and then we'd even like to do more than that because then you get into female genital mutilation, which we view as is equal problem. So we're very underfunded, but we do a good job. Make the most out of what we have, and we want to continue to do that in the future and create change and protect children.
Okay. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for being on the show today. Just mention your website one more time for people to find the information. And again, I just want to thank you so much for the work that you've done protecting children, protecting baby boys. And just tell us one more time how to find it on the website.
Our website is intaction.org. That's intaction. And Kathy, thank you so much for this opportunity to help us get the word out.
You're very welcome. We're going to go to a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum.